The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Yet another step forward for the UAW in Tennessee. All eyes on the VW plant in Chattanooga and what workers are now saying. Today on the show, the American Federation of Government Employees and a key player pushing the 32-hour work week in America. Welcome to the Wednesday, March 20th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Tanita Cole is going to be our first guest on the show today. She is a 6th District representative of the National VA Council on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees. AFGE.org is a national website, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. A little background on Tanita. She worked at the VA in Dayton, Ohio for over three decades, previously served as president of AFGE Local 2209. And this being Women's History Month, the entire month of March is Women's History Month. We're going to talk about the importance of union membership for women who want and should get fair treatment on the job. It's not easy. It's not easy. We'll also touch on a new VA contract. So Tanita's going to really delve into that. And while we're talking about the American Federation of Government Employees, I got to do a shout out here to TSA Council 100. Thanks to their efforts and the national staff at the union, transportation security officers can now look forward to better rights on the job, more money in their pocket, and a more powerful voice at their airports and with the agency itself. This is long overdue. After months of collective bargaining between the agency and the union, a 7-year contract was agreed upon on March 5th. 2 days later, TSA Council 100, which represents TSOs across the nation, started a ratification process that went on for 45 days. The new contract is yet another example of the growing momentum of our union members at TSA. That's from AFGE Council 100 President Heidrick Thomas. Certain agency employee committees, for example, are normally controlled by the agency who took part in selecting members from the union. Now, the union will get to pick whomever it wants to represent the employees. We also have a comment from Johnny Jones. Now, Johnny's been on the show a number of times talking about the situation at the TSA. He serves as the Council 100 Secretary Treasurer. Johnny says that this new contract is the farthest TSA officers have come in the fight for Title V rights. And this is a quote from Johnny. It gets us very, very close to having Title V rights. The contract in itself, once it's signed, it's going to be hard to roll back. It gets us about 80% of what we've been wanting over the years. It's not perfect, but it's a hell of a lot better than what it was. That's the power of unions, no doubt about it, and definitely the power of the American Federation of Government Employees. Now, later in the show, we're going to do a little something different here. We are going to play a clip. You may recall me talking last week about the possibility. I mean, this is a long shot, let's be honest, but Bernie Sanders had a Senate hearing last week on the possibility of going toward a 32-hour work week, which is gaining traction in the United States. Other countries are moving in that direction and have moved in that direction. Now, what this would do, it would amend the Fair Labor Standards Act, reducing the standard work week from 40 hours to 32 and lower the maximum hours threshold for overtime pay for non-exempt employees. Senator Sanders pointed out, today in America, 28.5 million Americans, or about 18% of our workforce, now work over 60 hours a week. 40% of employees in America now work at least 50 hours a week. We were talking about a 40-hour work week 80 years ago, and that's what people today, despite the explosion of technology, are working. The sad reality is that Americans now work more hours than people of any other wealthy nation. And when you factor in how much people are getting paid, he pointed out that the average worker in America makes about $50 less than he or she did 50 years ago after adjusting for inflation. And the workers today are more productive, so they should work 32 hours. Well, one of the key players in this was Sean Fain. Now, you recall when the big three were negotiating last year, Sean Fain was pushing for a 32-hour work week. That was one of the demands. Well, they didn't get it. But I'll tell you, he definitely had some riveting testimony on Capitol Hill, and we're going to play his testimony later in the show here on America's Workforce. All right, now a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options to clients nationwide, and they've been doing this since 1928. Speaking of the UAW, workers at the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, filed a petition with the labor board to hold a union election. The UAW announced that a supermajority of the 4,000 eligible workers of the plant signed authorization cards supporting the union. Volkswagen workers who support unionization have expressed they want to push for higher wages and improve safety measures, and they hope to emulate the recent successes of the UAW with the big three automakers in Detroit. Now, the unionization of the VW workers in Chattanooga would represent a historic accomplishment. That plant is currently the only Volkswagen factory that lacks union representation. So if the workers vote to form a union, those workers would be the first American employees of a foreign automaker represented by a union. Little bit of history here. Successful union formation would also shift the tides for the Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, which, by the way, previously voted against union representation by the UAW. That was 10 years ago in 2014 and then again in 2019. Well, the UAW put together a new video of the workers speaking out in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
I am voting yes because we need a change.
We want to be heard. I want to be heard.
Forming a union is going to elevate our lives.
We are the union.
I want a union so I can have a voice in my working conditions.
Right now we have a say in nothing. I want our jobs and our lives to change for the better.
The reason I'm voting yes for the union is to have a voice. I've been on the other side of that table with management. It's 5-1. Felt like I was being ganged up against.
I'm voting yes because we have the choice to actually say what you want. Somebody will be there and have a voice.
I'm voting yes because they neglect to fix their equipment, put me on workers' comp leave, making 60% of my paycheck. People are not getting treated fairly. They're not getting the health care, or they're not getting the PTO.
Collective bargaining goes, we could get a lot more protecting ourselves from the decisions that the company makes. And I'm voting yes because I believe in the power of the UAW and the people that stand behind it.
Vote yes.
Vote yes.
Vote yes.
Vote yes.
Vote yes.
That is courtesy of the United Auto Workers, UAW.org. You can check out that video. Again, the workers at the Chattanooga, Tennessee plant filed a petition. This happened this week, with the National Labor Relations Board to hold a union election. That plant is VW's only U.S. assembly plant and employs over 4,000 workers, and it's the only VW plant globally with no form of union representation. Now, today, The UAW's amplified effort to unionize Volkswagen workers is just one example of their broader campaign. Sean Fain said, we're going to really target the South. We're talking BMW, Honda, Hyundai, Mazda, Mercedes, Nissan, Subaru, Toyota, as well as Volvo. UAW definitely on the move. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to focus on the American Federation of Government Employees.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Ironworkers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 ironworker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great ironworker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Ironworkers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Before we get to our first guest, I just want to do a shout out here to those behind the Real News Network. Yesterday on the show, we featured Maximilian Alvarez, who is the editor-in-chief of the Real News Network, and he had one of the union members from LIUNA who's suffering heart failure as a result of the tragedy at East Palestine, Ohio in February of 2023. Well, this Saturday, Justice for East Palestine residents and workers will be hosting a national conference for the people of East Palestine. So you can check out our show. There's a lot of information that Max covered yesterday. TheRealNews.com is his website. And of course, our podcast is awfpodcast.com, awfpodcast.com. Horrible situation would happen there. And what they're trying to do is get the president to issue a major disaster declaration for health care. Because right now, a lot of people, well, have lost their jobs. You lose your job, you lose your health care. And And the situation is horrible. It really is. So hopefully, with all the media attention this weekend, the president will do the right thing on that. Right now, let's go to a Dayton, Ohio, and welcome a newcomer to the show. That would be Tanita Cole. Tanita is a representative of the 6th District, that's Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky, of the National VA Council on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, longtime union member. She worked at the VA in Dayton for over 33 years and for 9 years served as president of AFGE Local 2209. Tanita Cole, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, sister?
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. You know, March is Women's History Month, and what we've been doing, and I want to thank the folks at the American Federation of Government Employee for going around and finding people like you, Tanita Cole, to talk about your journey. And the very fact that, you know, being a woman, it's not easy. And when you have that union support, that makes a big difference. But before we get into that, let's talk about the National VA Council. Why don't you explain to our listeners what the council is all about and also your role over the 3 decades at the American Federation? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was a union president at the Dayton VA Medical Center for 9 years. And I covered all the employees except for RNs and managers. And that included work conditions, any type of leave issues, maybe discipline, discrimination cases. I made sure that the employees had their rights. But on the other side, I also made sure that the veterans got good care because I work for a medical center. So my job as the president was to make sure that the veterans got good care and the employees that took care of the veterans had good working conditions.
And how are those conditions at the VA? Is this a regular hospital or a medical facility?
It's a full medical facility. We have an ER, we have a surgery. Our Dayton VA goes back to the Civil War, and we have a cemetery connected to it as well, which used to have a tunnel that they would take them from the hospital to the cemetery. So we have a lot of rich history with our hospital. It's fully, it has everything that an outside hospital has. So you can come to the ER, you can stay for surgery, you can, they have what's called a COC, which is for those that is like a nursing home. We have assisted living. We have a pretty big facility, and we just got a new director named Jennifer DeFrancesco, who is union friendly.
Well, that's good. You want that, no doubt about it, because there's a lot of people that are not union friendly. So that's definitely a good thing.
I've dealt with a couple of directors like that.
I'm sure you have over those 33 plus years. Yeah. What about staffing? I've been hearing some horror stories across the country about staffing, and it's not easy getting a job in a VA because there's a lot of paperwork, and I get it too. They want to vet everybody to make sure they're getting the right people. How are we doing in Dayton on that?
Well, if you ask the agency, they always have enough staffing. If you ask the union, they never have enough staffing. And it appears that they have gotten not just the Dayton VA, but the VA as a whole has gone over budget. So now they don't want to say it's a hiring freeze. They're calling it a hiring pause, but it's the same thing. So somehow they are not good with their money. But that doesn't stop them from not having enough staff. We always have been short staff, especially in nursing, because mm-hmm. they don't account for any outside situations. So they just only schedule just the bare minimum, which causes us to always be short of staff. They don't hire enough staff to begin with. We've always had shortages with housekeeping, getting housekeepers. We've always had shortage with getting policemen.
Tanita, by the way, we're speaking with Tanita Cole, who is the 6th District National VA Council Rep, based in Dayton, Ohio. Can we say that the vets are getting the care that they need and deserve in Dayton, Ohio right now?
Yes, because the union people care so much. So they will work short staff, and they will still make sure the veterans get the best care that they're supposed to get. It's not so much the union folks, it's the other folks, the managers. We,
gotcha.
As union people, most of them are vets. So they take great pride in taking care of them. So
right.
They get good care. They don't see it, but we as the union know it.
Mm-hmm. Vets helping vets. That's what it's all about. Now, didn't you get a new contract with the Veterans Administration? Wasn't that something that happened? It might have been some months ago or last year. Can you give us some details on that? Did it work? Did you get what you needed? I know there's always more that you need, but how do you feel about that?
Yes, we feel that we have a win. The union side felt very well about it. We pretty much rolled over all our contracts except for Article 23, which is about the hiring, which is what you spoke about earlier. So they mm-hmm. can post it. It just changes how many days they can post it. Post a vacancy announcement. But we on the VA Council side are so elated that we got this contract done after we had that other administration who was trying to bust our union up. But we have one of the best contracts in the country.
Can you give us some details on wage rates and how long is the contract, by the way?
3 years. Every 3 years, they can decide to open the contract back up. So once that other administration got in, they all decided they wanted to reopen our contract. And then they drug their feet. So it's every 3 years, but I can't tell you enough about this election year, how important that is, but I'm not sure I'm supposed to be talking about that.
Tanita, I hear you on that. We try to stay away from politics because there's a lot of division out there, but I get it. And this administration, to your point, has done a whole lot for union members, including the American Federation of Government Employees. Tanita Cole joining us on our live line today. She's a representative of the 6th District of the National VA Council that encompasses Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky. We'll talk about Women's History Month next, and later in the show, we're going to play a clip from Sean Fain, the president of the United Auto Workers, testifying on Capitol Hill about the possibility and why we should have a 32-hour work week in America. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
Attention members of the Heat and Frost Insulators Union who are interested in traveling. Central Ohio has more construction projects on the books than anywhere in the U.S. Mega projects, large and medium-sized jobs are creating more work than our local 50 brothers and sisters can handle. Projects like Intel, the Honda LG battery plant, and multiple data centers for Facebook, Google, and Amazon offer union wages, overtime, and exciting incentives. Local 50 is seeking union travelers to meet the needs of its signatory contractors who can put you to work immediately. If you're a member in good standing and interested in the work opportunities in Central Ohio, visit insulators50.com/AWF travel for more information. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, was on our show yesterday, and if you missed it, it's all archived on awfpodcast.com, awfpodcast.com. Let's go back to Dayton, Ohio, and rejoin Tanita Cole. Tanita, longtime union member with the American Federation of Government Employees, one of our proud national sponsors here on the show. She's worked at the medical facility for the Veterans Administration in Dayton for over 33 years, previously president of AFGE Local 2209. Tanita, I want to talk about your journey. You probably know that March is Women's History Month, and what we've been doing on the show this month is talking to people like yourself about their journey. And we all know it's not easy, and especially being a woman, person of color. Boy, I tell you, there's a lot of roadblocks out there. There's a lot of hurdles that you have to jump over. Let's go back to when you first started. Now, did you have union members in your family? I mean, how did you end up over at the VA? Can we talk about that?
Well, I ended up at the VA because I had went to LPN school, so I have a licensed practical nurse certificate, and the VA is like 15 minutes from where I live. And we used to be, when I was younger and I was a Girl Scout, we would go and put the flags in the cemetery. That was part of our community service. But my father is a retired union carpenter. So I grew, and my mom worked for the auto people, and she's a union person. So I've always been known about unions, and I was always told about unions. And once I got to the VA, I joined the union. So I've always been a unionist since I was little.
Right, right. So, Tanita, you saw the union difference, and you experienced that difference at a very young age. Now, take me back to when you first started at the medical center in Dayton, Ohio. You were what, like 23 years of age? I'm sure that, you know, there were some challenges for you when you started over there at the medical center and got involved in the union, and the union probably helped you out on a number of things. Can you reflect on that for us?
Yes. I first started at the VA when I was young, And I guess my first interaction with the union was we were having a meeting with the nurse manager, and I was speaking up about all of my coworkers' rights, and then they started to treat me differently. And I happened to have another LPN, and she said, "Hey, well, I'm in the union. You should join the union." I had another situation with another nurse manager, and I wrote up my whole statement in defense. And they said, "Hey, come on and be a union steward." I said, "Sure, why not? I know what the union is about, and I like fight for other people's rights." That led to me then being the recording secretary, and then I became the vice president, and then after that, I became the union president. But all through that, the VA nursing is probably one of the worst departments you can be in, because they're supposed to care for people and have compassion, but they're probably the most ruthless of all. So I started to get discriminated against based on being a unionist. I got discriminated against because I was black. So a lot of times, if I applied for positions, the nursing managers would block it and mm-hmm. say negative things, even though I was an exceptional employee. To the point, when I worked in, they used to call it a nursing home, I used to decorate the nursing home based on holidays, so the veterans could have an experience of being it like home, but more like a celebration. If it's Valentine's Day, we're going to decorate for Valentine's Day, things like that. And extra things like going to the canteen and getting them, stuff that they like or used to like, or snacks and so forth. But some managers don't care. If they find out you're a unionist, they are like, "We don't care. We're going to harass you." So I no longer work in nursing service, because of all of the just mistreatment. And they have no opportunities for you to advance unless you get your RN. And if you try to get in a different department, they try to block you. So there's a lot of boundaries and barriers for women, for women of color, if you're a unionist, the phrase is don't expect any more promotions or bonuses, because they're going to just say you're not a good employee. A lot of times the VA will say you're not a good employee because you're a unionist, which is not true, because we take care of the vets. I fight for the vets. Well, anytime I go on the Hill, I ask them to do things to help the veterans. Being a unionist is not for the faint.
Is that still going on at the VA center over there in Dayton?
Not as much, but it's still going on. The union office is still pretty busy. I'm down the I can tell you there are departments that are not good, like EMS, which is Environmental Management Services, which is pretty much housekeeping. They're not good. Them in Nutrition and Food Service, they don't treat their employees very well.
Tanita, this is amazing what you went through here. I have to ask you that there have probably had a time or several times when you're saying, "Man, enough is enough. I'm done with this." Or did it make you stronger because of those challenges?
I had both, because I had decided at 6 months that I wanted to quit. I said, "I don't have to put up with this. I can go work on the outside." And one of the nurse supervisors called me in and said, "Come on now, you can do this." And then once I got real active in the union, Then I said, no, you're not going to mistreat me, and you're not going to mistreat others. So if you are, then I'm going to call you on it. I'm going to do something about it, and I'm going to protect these employees' rights at all costs. So
yeah.
At first, I wanted to quit, but then it made me mad, and I said, no, I'm just going to fight for my people.
And that you did. Imagine if you didn't have the American Federation of Government Employees behind your back.
Listen, the American Federation of Government Employees has saved me and kept me, and I can't thank my union enough. There are so many opportunities they give me to help people. I teach classes. I'm able to represent people. I'm able to encourage other unionists. I'm telling you, I love my union.
Well, Tanita, you had some challenges. You still have challenges. And I thank you wholeheartedly for coming on America's Workforce and telling me and our listeners what you went through. I mean, again, this is Women's History Month. You made history. You're president of your local. You're a fighter. No doubt about that. And the fight continues. So thank you so much for sharing your story. Keep up the fight, and please stay in touch with us. Can you do that, Tanita?
Sure.
All right. Tanita Cole, 6th District Representative, National VA Council, on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees. Again, the local over there is 2209 in Dayton, Ohio. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear the testimony of Sean Fain, President of the United Auto Workers, on why we need a 32-hour work week. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. What we're going to do on the show right now is play a clip from Sean Fain. Sean is the fiery president of the United Auto Workers, and you may recall last year he was pushing for a 32-hour work week for his members with the Big Three. Well, he didn't get it, but he's still pushing for it. And last week, Bernie Sanders held a hearing on why we should go to a 32-hour work week. And here's what Sean Fain had to say.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairman Sanders, Dr. Cassidy, and members of the committee. I'm here to talk about one of the most important issues to any union leader and any working class person, any U.S. senator, and any human being. And that's our time. You know, as president of the United Auto Workers, I represent 400,000 working class people and 600,000 retirees. And I know when my members look back on their lives, they never say, I wish I would have worked more. When people reach the end of their lives, they never say, I wish I had made more money. What they wish for is they wish they had more time. And that's what work does. You know, work, we are paid for our time. And when we work, we are sacrificing time with other people, with family, friends, and other things we wish to do. You know, but time, just like every precious resource in our society, is not freely given to the working class. Since the Industrial Revolution, we've seen productivity in our society skyrocket. With the advance of technology, one worker is now doing what 12 workers used to do. More profit is being squeezed out of every hour, every minute, and every second. There was a time when this phenomenon was supposed to lead to workers getting their time back, getting some of their lives back. Nearly 100 years ago, economist John Maynard Keynes spoke of the future of workers' time. His worry that was with all the gains in productivity, we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves, and he predicted a 15-hour work week 100 years ago. You know, in my own union, I go back into our archives and I read about the fight for the 30-hour work week, an idea that was alive and well with our union back in the 1930s and 40s. But today, deep in the 21st century, we find these ideas unimaginable. Instead, we find workers working longer hours. We have workers working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. There are workers, not union, union or not, working multiple jobs. And they're living to work, and they're scraping to get by, and they're living paycheck to paycheck. You know, we find workers today, later in their life, working deep into their 60s, 70s, and 80s because they can't afford to retire. And we find associated deaths of despair from addiction and suicide of people who don't feel a life of endless, hopeless work is a life worth living. You know, we have workers who feel despair as a consequence of advances in technology. Workers have been sacrificed at the altar of greed, and they've been stripped of their dignity. We have a mental health crisis we talk about a lot in this country, but we never talk about the causes of that. You know, there's been studies done, you know, increases in stress from working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, you're sacrificing family life, things you want to pursue. It causes an increase in cortisol levels, which lead to heart disease, cancer, strokes. You know, but given all those facts, if someone is lucky enough to get a retire, typically when they've worked themselves to death their entire life, they face knee replacements, hip replacements, shoulder surgeries, and the rest of their lives figuring out how they're going to survive. So, you know, it's sad to say that in 1933, the U.S. Senate passed legislation to establish a 30-hour work week, but due to intense corporate opposition, that legislation failed. But in 1940, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act, establishing a 40-hour work week. 84 years ago, the 40-hour week was established. And since then, We've had a 400% increase in productivity, but nothing's changed. You know, that was why we had in our Big Three campaign, we had our stand-up strike. We raised the flag for a 32-hour work week. This isn't just a union issue, contrary to what some people want to talk about. This is a working class issue. And that's why 75% of Americans in our contract fight stood with us in that fight, because they're all living the same reality. You know, who's going to act to fix this epidemic of lives dominated by work? Are the employers going to act? Will Congress act? You know, how can working class peoples take back their lives and take back their time? And I know what people and many in this room will say. They'll say, people just don't want to work, or working class people are lazy. But the truth is, working class people aren't lazy. They're fed up. They're fed up with being left behind and stripped of dignity as wealth inequality in this nation, this world, spirals out of control. They're fed up that in America, three families have as much wealth as the bottom 50% of citizens in this nation. That is criminal. America is better than this. So I want to close with this. I agree there is an epidemic in this country of people who don't want to work. People who can't be bothered to get up every day and contribute to our society, but instead want to freeload off the labor of others. But those aren't blue-collar people. Those aren't working-class people. It's a group of people who are never talked about for how little they actually work and produce and how little they contribute to humanity. The people I'm talking about are the Wall Street freeloaders, the masters of passive income. Those who profit off the labor of others have all the time in the world. While those who make this country run, the people who build the products and contribute to labor, have less and less time for themselves, for their families, and for their lives. So our union's going to continue to fight for the rights of working class people to take back their lives and take back their time. And we ask you to stand up with the American workers and support us in that mission. Thank you.
You're listening to Sean Fain, who is the president of the United Auto Workers, testifying on Capitol Hill about why we need a 32-hour work week. In this next segment, Bernie Sanders, who chaired the committee, talked about life on the assembly line and how hard and difficult it's been for so many years and why we need to push for that 32-hour work week.
You have been with the union for over three decades. No doubt, as president, you've met thousands of workers, you've met thousands of retirees. Tell the American people what it's like to work on a factory floor in some cases. I mean, by the way, I learned this recently. There are people today in America who are working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. Unbelievable. But President Fain, talk about the impact on the life of a worker mentally, physically, who is doing work, hard work, day after day, year after year. What happens to that person?
Thank you. So, you know, I find irony in some of the statements I would just listen to, but so, you know, the typical life of a factory worker, I mean, and this is union or not, and it's actually worse for non-union workers because they have less rules that govern their workplace. But, you know, when you're, you know, typically, many factory workers, many typical schedules in manufacturing are 12-hour schedules, and they're 7 days a week. A lot of these places run around the clock. When you are standing on concrete floors 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, year after year after year, there's a lot of wear and tear on a person's body. As I say, people when they age, you know, they end up, you know, in their older working years, end up getting knee replacements, hip replacements, shoulder surgeries, you know, but I just find an irony in some of this that, you know, mentally the stress of working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, you know, when you don't get to see your kids, you don't get to go home and have dinner with your kids, you don't get to make sure they're getting their homework done, you don't get to spend quality time with family, or just even if you don't have a family, if you have quality time for yourself, you know, something sacrificed when you're working 12 hours a day, either sleep or time with family, something else is sacrificed. We only have so much time in a day. But, you know, I find an irony in some of the comments that were made by Mr. King as far as the shortage of workers. You know, I don't believe we have a shortage of workers in this country. I think COVID made people wake up and realize what's important in life. And it's not working for $12 an hour and 12 hours a day and multiple jobs to struggle to get by. So this shortage of workers that we see, I don't believe it's a shortage. I believe it's a fact that people have woke up and they've decided, I'm not going to leave my home for $12 an hour when I can't even afford to pay the bills. And also, you know, going back to, you know, letting the markets determine this, and it's just an HR standard talking point about passing added cost onto the consumer. Well, I witnessed inflation the last 4 years. That wasn't caused by workers. It was caused by two words, corporate greed. It was consumer price gouging. And so, you know, that to me, we got to get focused on the reality here.
You can talk about church if you want or if you don't want, but it is just true that some of the leisure time activities, some of the institutions that Americans found value and meaning in are less accessible when you have to work these long hours. I'd love to just hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things we talked about with the 32-hour work week when we put that in our contract talks was the fact that we wanted to create work-life balance because it's just, in this country, we are the most productive, I mean, sadly, I say, not proudly, sadly, we are the most productive nation in the world, which means our people are working more and more hours with less and less people, and something's got to give. And so, you know, it's work-life balance. And as I say, when you're working multiple jobs to live paycheck to paycheck, or you're working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, something else is sacrificed in that. And it's what ends up happening. You have to sacrifice, you know, ability to go to church. If it's something else to do on a Sunday, maybe you get a Sunday off and you haven't slept all week and you spend the whole day sleeping. I mean, that is a reality a lot of workers face on some of the schedules they work. And you know, the thing to me that I think, I hear all this, you know, we've heard my whole life about good for business is good for people, trickle-down economics and all those type things. But to me, we have to focus, I do believe Congress has an obligation here in spending priorities and regulations. And that may be an ugly word to some people that represent business. But, you know, the point of this should be done to create more jobs at a better rate of pay so that people have more free time to live. And, you know, if government's going to invest in business, the trillions of dollars we invest in business, that our taxpayer dollars invest in business, those benefits should be going to working class people, not just strictly business. And that's the problem. All this money goes to business, but it never seems to funnel its way down to benefit working class people.
What do you think it would take to get those employers to move? You know, I think in terms of the 36-hour work week that we tried when I was mayor of the city, it's really like roughly a 10% pay raise is the way to think about doing something like that. The level of appreciation of people having that Friday afternoon off was palpable. You could feel it. Anyway, what was your sense on that?
Well, I think it's just a fear of change or something, doing something different. I mean, you look at, there are studies that have been done when workers, especially factory workers in manufacturing, when they work anything after 10 hours typically is they're not as productive. It just, the wear and tear that you go through throughout the day, there have been a lot of studies done on that productivity actually drops off. So there are benefits to shorter working hours. And as a person who stood on a line, you know, as an 18-year-old, I can vividly remember putting a part on a transmission. I would sit there. It's monotonous work, doing it over and over and over. And, you know, literally after 2 hours of that, you know, your mind's wandering off. And imagine doing that for 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are a lot of benefits to having, you know, some semblance of work-life balance. But unfortunately, you know, with the advances in technology, the companies choose to eliminate jobs and squeeze more and more people, the remaining people, you know, working more and more hours, and that just doesn't work.
Sean Fain on Capitol Hill last week testifying why we need a 32-hour work week in America. That'll be it for another edition of the show. Coming up tomorrow, the president of the United Steelworkers and the United Faculty of Florida. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.